All right, thank you. Let me also thank the organizers for inviting me and for the opportunity to give a talk here. I'm going to talk about some joint work with Wiki Tang. And at the beginning of this, we also had some discussions with Pei Ki Lin. So, all right, so let me just begin by running through the definitions of the two items that occur in the title, so namely McPherson space and the L1 spreading model. So many people have mentioned about these things before, so I think I can just go through. Sorry? Okay, so right, so McPherson spaces are defined in terms of two sets of parameters. Theta n's are numbers, as shown here, and we can assume without loss of generality that we have this relationship here. And Fn are the Schreier families, which many people have mentioned already. Okay, S1 is this, I suppose many people put the empty set there as well, so I cheat by just saying the minimum of the empty set is infinity, so it's included that way. All right, so so I'm only using the finite, except for the last one. So only the Schreier families with the finite subscripts, except for this S omega, which are me. All right, so S omega is defined this way. Okay, so actually it involves some choices here. I just choose this N. You have to choose some sequence of ordinals to go up to omega. So, but for our purposes, it makes no difference. I just chose the N here. Okay. So, and this terminology, at some family of sets, is Sn admissible? Okay. So it means the standard thing here. And again, people have used this notation already. So E1 less than E2 just means that the largest element in E1 is smaller than the smallest element in E2. And these E's are finite subsets of the natural numbers. Okay. One more notation, usual one. So E multiplied by a vector, E being a set, just means you just want to chop off the rest of the coordinates that are not in E. Okay. And so the McPherson space is defined with respect to this implicit norm. So it's like the I think Ted showed the norm, implicit norm for the Zeroson space, where basically you have only one term here. So this is mixed Zeroson space. You have infinite number of terms here. All right. So at each stage, well, this is not so important part. This is the important part here. Is at each stage, what you do is you choose one n, and then you choose a way to break up the your vector. All right. So that's the point. Okay. So I should mention that mixed Zeroson spaces were discovered by, should leave these here, Argyros and Deliani, although I think specimens of them existed before, like for instance, I think Schoenfresh space is one of them. Okay. So, and other. Oh, right, Tyrolmon space. Right, yes. Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Oh, okay, so here's the definition of L1. Okay, so again, I'm using this notation. Some people just say L1 alpha spreading model, but I put the ones and the alphas in different places than other people, so I put it as alpha. L1 S alpha spreading model like this, so just to be clear. And for me, again, alpha would be just an integer, but natural number or omega at most. So this is the definition. So just want to say you've got some L1 thing going on for all S alpha sets. Okay, S alpha as defined over here. Okay, and actually, I want to talk about the parameter delta. That's why I changed it instead of bounded sequence. So just for the definition itself, the word bounded sequence is correct there. But if you want to mention the parameter, then I have to have some upper bound for the norms of the element. So I put it there. All right. So if you have such a thing, for this particular delta, I will say that you have L1 S alpha spreading model with constant delta. All right. And so this is a theorem we were looking at and from which all these things started. And this is a theorem of Argyros-Deliani and Manoussakis. So they showed that if you have this condition, theta n to the 1 over n has limit 1. Okay. By the way, because of this assumption here, you can easily check that this limit, theta n to the 1 over n, always exists. Okay, and of course it's between 0 and 1. So if it's the maximum number, then Argyros, Deliani, and Manoussakis show that every Bloch subspace of this mixed Dirichlet space contains an L1 S omega spreading model. Okay, and all right, so okay, I'd like to think of this theorem in two parts. So there is the question of when does your whole space contain an L1 S omega spreading model, and then there is another part which says this happens hereditarily. So this is what this theorem says. All right, not only is it in your space, but L1 S omega spreading models are in there hereditarily. Okay, so let me just the turn of this side. So let me just look at the non-hereditary situation first. So I have this double limit kind of condition, and the theorem is that if this happens, then this is completely non-hereditary. Well, it doesn't just say it. You get L1 S omega spreading model in the whole space, but in any. Oh, I didn't mention that. The unit vector basis is the one unconditional basis of any mixed zeros in space. All right. So En is the. I didn't name that. So the. If you take any subspace generated by a subsequence of unit vector basis, you get an L1 S omega spreading model there, provided you have this double limit condition. Okay? The part about subsequence of the unit vector base is not really anything, because once you can do it for the whole space, you can do it for any of these subsequences with the same construction. Okay? I just want to mention here, if you compare the two conditions, this double limit thing and this limit of theta n to the 1 over n, this one is strictly weaker than this. It's sort of like comparing between the root test and the ratio test or something like that. Okay, so it's a little bit weaker. Okay, in some sense, this is the best possible, well, for the non-hereditary question. For the reasons I listed there. Look for my notes. Okay, right. So, this funny kind of double limit condition, it came up in some work I did with Wiki. Right. So what we showed was that we were computing the Borgain L1 index, which was mentioned by Dale Ausbach the other day in his talk. So we computed Borgain L1 index of mixed zeros in spaces, all right? And what we showed was that in this instance, if this double limit is 0, then the Borgain L1 index of this space would be omega to the omega, and if it's bigger than 0, it would be omega to the omega times 2, okay? So, right, so where am I here? That one. Okay, so the Judd and Odell proved that the L1 index of any separable bonding space not containing L1 is of this form omega to alpha. And also the order of any L1 tree, which you use to define the L1 index, all right, is strictly less than this x is just any monic space, right? It's strictly less than the L1 index, whatever it comes out to be, all right? And in the case of the mixed zeros in space, it's just because of the way you define the norm. Once you get an S alpha, L1 S alpha spreading model, you can always upgrade it by, getting worse constants. Okay, upgrade by adding N here. So, and of course the L1 S alpha spreading model and L1 tree is connected in this way. When you have L1 S alpha spreading model, then you have a L1 tree of order omega to the alpha. So if I put these all together, it should say that this is the best possible because, how does it work? If you've got, basically, first of all, you've got L1 SN spreading models for free, starting from here. All right? So you've got L1 SN spreading models for free, you get L1 trees of order omega to the N for free. So immediately your L1 index is at, So L1 SN spreading models is nothing to brag about. You can get it for free. All right? So the next question is L1 S omega spreading models. All right? So once you get that, you will always also be able to upgrade them to L1 S omega plus N spreading models, which gives you L1 trees of omega to the omega plus N for any N, which means you will get omega to the omega times 2 for your L1 index already. So you cannot get better than that. And you cannot get an L1 S omega times 2 spreading model, right, defined in the same way, because of this. Any L1 tree has to be strictly less than the L1 index, right? And the L1 index, the best you can get is this. So basically the only L1 spreading model that is of interest is the L1 S omega one, okay? And this is the... this is the only situation you can get it because, the double limit condition bigger than zero, that's the only case when you can get it, because when the double limit is zero, then your L1 index would be this, and you won't be able to get L1 S omega spreading model. Okay, so this is why this is best possible in this situation, if you don't care about the hereditary. Okay, so I'm not going to talk very much about how you do the construction. The construction is inspired by the one in Argyros Giuliani, actually a predecessor of this paper, where there was one more co-author, namely Dinka Kutsarova. So it's sort of like the one there, right? Although you just do it a bit more carefully, then you get slightly better thing. All right, so let me cover this part up first. All right, so this is the situation we have so far. So, okay, now go to the hereditary question, but this is the situation we have so far. So you have L1 S omega spreading model, then you must have the large L1 index. So the double limit must be bigger than zero. So let's call it dagger condition. All right. On the other hand, if you have this dagger, then you would know that you get L1S omega spreading model on any subsequence of the unit vector basis. So if you get this kind of best possible wish kind of thing, that every block, this means block sequence. If your space, so here I'm talking a block subspace of the whole space here. So I can actually talk about them one at a time instead of saying hereditary. All right, so talk about them one at a time. So if this block subspace actually contains a block equivalent to a subsequence, then obviously, because on your subsequence you can make your L1 S omega spreading model, this is equivalent to it, so no problem. Right, so of course this is a big wish here, so this is the main thing you want to figure out when you can do this. Well, I still don't know, but what I can do is, or what we can do is, have this well, we figure out all these equivalent conditions for it, all right? But I don't know when you will have this, say, for every x, right? In terms of the theta, okay? Of course, everything should be determined in terms of the theta, okay? But I couldn't figure out how, what's the right condition for the theta, all right? So so these are equivalent conditions. So dagger plus this wishful thinking statement, all right? Oh, and of course here, it's natural to fix the subsequence to be the one that's related to your xn in this way. Actually, you can put your kn anywhere inside the support of xn, but I just put it at the end, okay? So so these are all equivalent, okay? And going down the list is not a problem. One implies two is just what we mentioned before. Two implies three is trivial. Three implies four, also trivial. So main thing is just to go back. Four implies one. So where is it? Here. Oh, I have something else to show down here. All right. Okay, so let me remark that this sort of gives an explanation of why the, if you like, it gives an explanation of why the Argyros, Dilyani, Manousakis theorem works. So this is the theorem I'm referring to. So because it comes out of this result of Judd and Odell, that you can, this is just doing the Jane thing. So non-distortability of L1 kind of thing. So, and you do this for spreading models. All right, so if you have F 2N spreading model with constant delta, then you can upgrade the constant here if you give up some, the size of the family. All right, so, and it works this way. So in the case of this assumption, suppose you have this assumption, well, you get all these things for free, L1S n times 2k spreading model with constant theta n times 2k. Is this readable? All right, so, well, just move it a bit. All right, so this comes for free, and just by direct calculation, you get this. And this will go to 1. You fix the n and let k go to infinity, that goes to 1. So you can get L1 Sn spreading models with uniform constants. And if the theorem works, then you've got it everywhere. Right? Oh, this happens in every block subspace, of course. You can get this. Okay? Just. So this gives an explanation, well, at least to me, of why the this theorem 1 works here. Now, let's see. I want to talk about some idea about how you prove this theorem. If I can find the right slide. Ah, here. Okay. Think a little bit at a time. So up to here, yeah. Okay. All right. So right. So to go back from 4 to 1, that's the key step, right? So this is the key step. This is how you do go from 4 to 1. All right. It's in proposition 5, the things above is just some definition. These are the equivalent norms. So this is in the way you define the equivalent norm comes from the way you define the mixed zeros and norm itself. So all you do is, what you're saying is you're always choosing that particular n to break up. Something? I cannot find the slide. Okay, never mind. All right, so And of course, I leave out the theta n, it makes no difference whether you have that or not. And just the notation, obvious, meaning what it means to have an n tail of a box subspace. All right, so this is a key step. So this step, this property, I call it star. So if you have this star property here, so this is this is the smallest possible. Obviously, I mean, if you don't break up the vector itself at all, so you take E1 to cover the entire support of your X and nothing else, no other E2 and anything else, then of course you already get back the norm of the vector X, so you're not going to be able to make this X to the N very small, but what you hope is that it doesn't grow. Right, so this is the best possible kind of thing. All right, so if you can do this, then you will get this this wish. Oh, it's gone. Right, the wish up there. Right, okay. So this is the step. Okay, so why does it prove the 4 implies 1? Because 4, no, this is in the particular X. X is the, you're always talking about X is a block subspace. So from now on, X will be a block subspace, which you are given. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Because basically, this will move it back to a subsequence here, and on subsequences, you can do that. Yeah. All right. Okay. So the X is a given block subspace, right, like above. All right. So it's given to you. You have no choice about that. Okay. So, right. So I want to explain this 4 of theorem 3 over there implies this star. So, and of course, proposition 5 says if you get your star, you get your wish. All right? Okay. So, it's pretty easy to see that 4 of proposition 5 gets you star. So here is a small argument I wrote down for it. So, 4 means you have a large L1 tree. You take one, I don't know, of the size at least, say, well, if you're given the n, you take one which is much bigger than omega to the n, the order of L1 tree, then you will get a finite block sequence in the n tail uniformly equivalent to L1i basis, uniformly meaning that as you vary the n, all right? And where this is maximal, or actually you can say where this is not even in Sn plus 1 or something, right? Because if all these guys are in Sn plus 1, then when you start calculating the L1 index, you're lopping things off from the back, then you will be lopping things off from this Sn plus 1 set, and eventually they disappear too quickly to your liking. All right, so roughly that's how it goes. So when you can get this, then you can choose scalars which are sum up to 1, so actually you can make them convex, the absolute value makes no difference, and it's small when, so because this is the maximal Sn plus 1, so you can still add up to 1 even though all the Sn pieces are small. So for instance, you can use the repeated averages as defined by Giros, Mercurakis, Sapalius, right, yeah, Sapalius, excuse my pronunciation. All right. So and then you just take your X to be this guy, and I claim that it works. Works meaning the X is obviously norm. Well, it's not actually 1 because I only have some kind of equivalence here, but of the order 1, the norm of X of the order 1, and works meaning I get this for the particular n. So here's a little picture for it. Oops. Here's a little picture for it. Ah. Minimal? Yes. Okay, these are my XKs running through. So these are unnamed, but so this is one AK XK. So I want to show that this is small, which means I'm allowed to break it up using some SN admissible family. So this is obviously the second line is the SN admissible family. All right, and okay, of course I've cheated. I don't have things that straddle some vector up, right? But small cheat, all right? Okay, so when you do this, when you sum over the long EIs, I think the long and short meaning is obvious. I've shown one long one, and I've shown a bunch of short ones. All right, so if you sum over the long EIs, well, it's just because of this L1 condition, or it's just triangle inequality. Yeah, so, right? So sum over the long ones, you get like less than or equal to 1, again, up to the equivalence constant here, right? It's just triangle inequality. You sum over the short ones. Remember, this is an SN admissible breaking. So for one of these, you get, for one of these particular case, then you don't have this, then you get 1 over theta n, well, times the number AK, you don't have the sum yet. Okay, right? Because this is an SN admissible breaking, so when you, this is one of the ways to calculate the norm of the vector XK, which I'm assuming to be 1, so you get this number, all right? And so you sum over all the short ones, so there may be many short ones, so these are the, actually, the F counts basically all the K's which are broken up by short intervals. Okay? And but there how many of them are there? Well, the whole family is SN. So the number that are touched by short intervals will also be some kind of SN, which I've made small. Well, I didn't say how small, but as small as you like. All right? So that's why when you calculate the N norm here, you get at most some constant. Okay, so that can be done. All right, so what does it show? Right, so this shows that the condition 4 in theorem 3 before implies this condition star. And once we've got star, well, according to proposition 5, we get our wish. So let's see why that is so. So this is the last bit. Okay, right. So, there's this part here. Just a remark here. Right, just a remark here. Forgot to mention this. It's not really central to our discussion, but I just observed this, that if you have star, well, if the particular X, the particular block subspace has star, you can do such things. Well, the first one, the Y, is just what the star says. Right? You can get a Y, which is normalized with the N norm less than or equal to this constant. Right? And to get a Z, well, this is what you do. Because from the Y, from the star, you get this this wish here. So actually what I mean is this Xn here is, that should not be Km. That should be just Xn. Oop. right? From the star, you get this nice sequence xm or xn, right? So, and which behaves just like the subsequence, corresponding subsequence, ekm, right? And if you're on the subsequence of the unit vector basis, it's no problem to make such a thing. It's quite straightforward to do. So if you can do it for this, by equivalence, you can do it for this z. Alright, so, well, actually there's some calculation to do there, but it's not, no big deal. Alright, so in particular, if this holds hereditarily, this star thing holds hereditarily, this sequence of norms will arbitrarily distort this mixed zeros in space, right? And I don't define what distortion is because people have mentioned it already. Right? Maybe Ted or Thomas. Someone must have mentioned it. Okay. So, all right. But it's not central to what I tried to do anyway. We just tried to figure out the L1 S omega sparing model. So, I happen just to notice that there seems to be some connection there. All right. So. Alright, well, of course, at the heart of these things, there must be some calculation. So it depends on how you calculate things. I think I took off the wrong slide. Put it here so we can see the proposition. Alright, so the proposition is what I'm trying to prove. Okay, so I give some idea of how you prove it. Okay, so, you have to figure out your favorite way of calculating the norm of the mixed zeros in space, and I do it by admissible trees. Okay, so there are other ways as well, which other people favor, but somehow I've gotten used to the trees. So I'm trying to find the definition of the mixed zeros in space. Oh, right here. Okay. Put it up for a moment. Definition of mixed zeros in space says, well, if you want to calculate a vector, either you just calculate the C0 norm, which is the trivial case, right? Or you have to pick some n and some way to break up your vector, Sn way to break up your vector. So in this picture here, the first line is supposed to be the support of the vector you're calculating, the whole big vector X. So then, first step, well, assume that the first step is not C0, otherwise it's very trivial. If it's not C0, you have to choose some N, and that's the N1, that's what it's there for, and you break up into SN1 admissible family, which is represented by only three guys. All right? Normally there are lots of them. Okay, then each one you iterate, because it's an implicit equation here, so if you want to calculate the norm of this middle one here, you break again. You choose another number, N2, and you break again. All right. So, of course, these may also break, but it's hard enough to draw those, so I didn't draw the rest. All right, so this is how you break. Okay, and so here I've shown three iterations for only the central guy. So E is just a label. So this E is the label for this particular node that you end up with at the end there. Okay? So how do you calculate the norm? So every time you break, you pay for it. You pay for it by multiplying by some theta n. So if you look at the E, when you arrive here, you have paid three times. You have to multiply by theta n1, theta n2, theta n3, right? So here are the descriptions. So this is just what I was saying before. If a node splits, its children form an Sn admissible collection for some n, and those are the n1, n2, n3. And for the particular node E that is shown, this is the price you pay. I call it the tag. So tag of E is the product of the three thetas. And just for convenience, I let L to be the sum of those three numbers. We need this parameter later on. So for this tree, this particular admissible tree, you apply to X. By that, I would mean that you calculate this. All right, overall, summing over all terminal nodes. All right. Let me emphasize here that I don't require that I break my nodes to the bitter end. So what I mean by bitter end is that at the end, at some time, of course, you end up with your C0 norm. Then you don't break any further. All right. So, but you can decide to stop at any time. Of course, in that case, your norm won't be the C0 norm, this thing here. So here, this is not necessarily the C0 norm. All right? I don't break until I get C0 norm. I can stop any time I want. All right? Okay? So, right, but just to mention, of course, I can choose to do that if I like. Right? I can choose to break it until the bitter end so that I end up with the C0 norm all at the bottom, the terminal nodes. Okay, and in that case, of course, I can modify my E because I'm just picking up the C0 norm. I can modify my E to have only a single element. Okay, so, and there's one observation there. Right, this, the reason why product of thetas is less than theta of the sum is the assumption. Theta n plus m is bigger than or equal to theta n times theta m. So this is just an estimate that we will use in some calculations. All right. Okay. So, how do you prove the proposition? Okay, so the proposition is, can you find it again? Here. Proposition is that? Okay. So, I'm in my space and I have a condition star. So I just apply it in the natural way to do some, it's sort of like gliding hump kind of thing. So you can choose such things, it's not a problem, right? So you can choose your xk so that it's somehow small with respect to the previous norm. And then once you know what the previous one, what your xk is, you choose an nk so large because these theta nks go to zero. You choose an nk so large so that theta nk times the L1 norm is small, right? So that can be done. And I need to produce, so I claim that this sequence that I produce, this xk, is the wish that I'm wishing for. So this is normalized block equivalent to the subsequence. All right, so so I have to prove this. Actually, the inequality in the other direction is trivial. Okay, so. Well, at least maybe not so trivial, but it's not so difficult. Okay, so this is the main direction that I want to show. So okay, so that means I have my x. Oh, these aks are arbitrary constants. I have to show this for any set of constants ak, of course, any set of scalars. Okay, so you give me a particular bunch of scalars, and I calculate away the left hand side, the norm. Okay, using these norming trees, admissible trees. Right? So this is a picture again. I've shown the F should be here. Okay. So I've shown one particular term, AKXK. There are many of them. So in this picture, the first line are vectors. Starting from this line on, that's the admissible tree. Okay? So So you, this is the root of your admissible tree. Then you go many steps until you're down here. And at this point, it splits into short guys. Short meaning they all sit inside some particular XK. Again, I'm making the assumption that I don't ever split one of these vectors with my, I don't ever straddle two vectors with my nodes here. All right, so again, small price to pay there. All right, so, right, so this is the picture. And, oh, and here, at any moment when I see short nodes, I don't split anymore. So at this point, these short nodes, I mean, the norm here may not be the C0 norm. Okay, but as long as I see short nodes, I stop. I don't care about the rest of the splitting. Okay, right? So this is what my tree will look like to calculate the. Okay, so first case. Oh, what's the meaning of this M? This is the number for the splitting. So every time you split up something, you're choosing some number, right? The S, the M, okay? So, well, or the N we call it before. So here I call it M. So this is M is the index for your splitting, all right? All right, so that means here you split into SM admissible family, okay? So you split this way. case one, all right? So M is less than NK minus one. Okay, so this condition is local, so when you move to another XK, this K will change, all right? Okay, so this K is not fixed throughout. So, but anyway, so here's the calculation. So, when you calculate over, so this sum is over only over these pieces. I don't care about what happens elsewhere, all right? So, I'm summing over only over these pieces here, and this is what I get when I apply the tree to the vector x for that part, right? I will get my ak, I will get e applied to xk, and then the tags, okay? So, of course, all these guys have the same tag because they all run through the same splitting, right? So I just, e0 is this particular one, use it as a representative. So this is less than or equal to c, this is because of the assumption, the first dot up there, right? So the M is now less than or equal to NK minus 1. So you get C at most from summing all these. Yeah, summing all these, you get at most C. So you get the C there, then you get your AK, then you get your tag. Okay? Right? So, and this you can recapture. You have to compare with the right-hand side. You can recapture this on the right-hand side if you simply use the same tree and stick it on the element y. When you apply the same tree to the element y, this e0 will pick up that ake, jk, and you get this number back. So this part is no problem. Right? Okay, this part is no problem. Okay, and so I want to mention here, you don't really need this. All you need to know is that this whole bunch here is SNK minus 1 admissible. That's all. Okay? You don't really need to know. Of course, this will imply this, in which case this calculation works. Okay. Let's do this quickly now. Okay. So another situation is when this happens. Okay. These are sort of the easy situations. So when the L of E, again, E is one of these things here. They all have the same L, again. They all went through the same splitting. So L of E is bigger than or equal to NK. Again, the condition depends on where you're at. So for this particular K. So if that's true, then you use the second. So it's better not move it up so high. So you use the second big dot up there, right? Second bullet thing. So this is same, again, same sum over the same set of E's. Then you get tag. mag is less than or equal to theta sub LE. So this is why tag got replaced by theta sub LE, but LE is at least as big as NK and the thetas are decreasing. So you replace it by theta NK. So this tag metamorphose into this. And the rest of the sum, I'm just being very generous and just take the L1 on. Right? Okay? So, and that's small. That this number is the, without the AK, I get 1 over 2 to the K. So even if I sum over all Ks, I get something less than the C0 norm of the coefficients. So that's all right. So that's definitely majorized by the right-hand side. Okay? So that part is, again, all right. So, this is the final part. What's left? I think maybe you've seen this guy long enough. So, this is all right, this is all right. So, if I got it all right, this should be what's left. Right? Okay? M is, of course, less than equal to LE. L of E is the sum of all the splittings. This is one particular one. So L of E is definitely bigger than equal to M. So that's the case left. Right? So observe that in this case, refer to the picture over here. When you sum, you get your AK, you sum over those TE, EXK, well, you sum over these guys, it's like one way to calculate the norm of XK, right? Well, this one step. Yeah, so you have to think of the tag of E as all the thetas, well, tag of F, times the extra one theta. So T of E is tag of F times theta sub M. So this guy, right? So the theta sub M goes with this, becomes the norm of XK, well, after summing, right? By definition. So that's why you end up with this thing here. Okay? Norm of XK is 1. Yeah. Alright, so this is what happens here. Okay? And right, so here's the way I think of it. What you get is, right, when you want to compare with the right hand side there, well, you've got your AK, right? You've got your tree here. Well, it's sort of like you're at the wrong level. That's how I think of it. So if you use this tree down to here to calculate the norm of the Y, right, what you will get is T of E times AK for this part here, right? But what you're off by one level. You want T of F, the tag one level above, right? You need to suck it back up to that one level, okay? Right? So how do you do this? So here's a picture. I need to explain what this picture means, of course. So this is a, maybe this is in the way. Let me just pull it off. All right. So this is a, well, obviously this is a tree, admissible tree. The dots are the terminal nodes. All right. They don't look like nodes. They just look like dots, but they are meant to be terminal nodes. Okay. And this is how your admissible tree came to be. And I make it so that can I line them up? Yeah, so every set of dots is supposed to split up one particular X. Okay, so that's what the picture looks like. Why don't you have other sets of dots back here? It's because of those conditions that they've gone before. It's because of this condition on the side, if you can read it, this vertical condition that forces basically your dots to be unique. All right. So, and also you don't have dots, you don't have long things in front of the dots basically with, for the same reason. Okay, I don't go into those. So picture will end up to be like this. So just remember each set of dots marks the position of one particular X. That's what this picture is supposed to mean. Don't disregard the difference in color. I just wanted to put in one more there. It looks better to me. I don't know why. Okay, so, alright, so this is how you, this is your tree to calculate the norm of the X, the thing X on the left-hand side. Alright, but now you want to, now it's all important that I find my picture. Now, as I mentioned before, you want to move things up one level. Again, need to explain to you what this picture means. Maybe I can turn off the other one. All right. So, on the Y itself, so the original one, the printed one, is for calculating the norm of X. All right. On the Y itself, what you want is to have the line is still visible. All right, so F is the parent of E. So you want to move up one level. So instead of, say, this set of dots here, calculating the norm here, well, you want to move up one level. Okay, so everyone, that's what I've done. For every set of dots, I have moved up one level and cross out the dots. They are no longer to be in my new tree. I throw them away. I don't want them. I want to move up one level. Right? Okay, so this is all very well. Of course, the problem with, do you still have admissibility? I forgot to cross off these dots. They should be gone. Right? The problem is, do you still have admissibility? Okay? Right? Well, let's look at this fight here. There are basically two situations. Let's look at this part here. Right, okay, what I want to say one thing before I draw it. I never, my original notes, I never split them into more than two pieces. At most, I will split them into two, each one into two. Okay, so for this one, you can see there's no choice. I want this to be a descendant of these things back here, but this one has to be a node by itself, so this one has to move up, so that it finds its parent up here. So that one has to be there already, right? Make sense? Okay, so that one has to be there. That one has to be there, right? And same for this one. This one has to be here, okay? So now, originally I had this one, we got lucky. We didn't have to split it. Well, we could have been forced to split it, but in this case, we don't have to. So originally I had three. Now, I split, some of them have been split into two, so now I've got five things. Alright? So, well, what do you do? Of course, three becomes five, it ruins your admissibility. Well, what you do is, it forces you to split the one on top into two to regain admissibility. Right? So, that, you can do that. So, of course, the numbers are not three and five, but it's sort of a doubling. So, you can split into two. Respecting, so maybe you take the first two, then the last three, you regain your admissibility. Okay? Now this is a situation when sort of there are no dots in front. That's how I think of it. Okay, you come to a situation when there are some dots in front. What happens? So let me just move this here first. So here's the situation. So here, look at now this place, right? This place here. Well, actually, have you take it together with the other place? Let me put in everything. Okay, it got still 1 minute. This should be enough to finish. Actually, I've already committed a crime down here, but let me explain it. I don't want to put this in so early. Okay, never mind. All right, so I put this one in a little bit early. But what happens is this. Everyone, these splitting sort of, some of them, they bubble up, right? So these got doubled, so it forces you to double here, right? Except when you come into a place where you have three dots, that saves you. Because those three dots, I didn't mention this explicitly, but those three dots, you can assume that they're not F1 admissible. If they were, you would have thrown them away because they would have been too small. All right, so they're not F1 admissible. Now you give them up, so you don't have that F1 there. So you have given away an F1, so of course you can double. So that's not a problem. That's how you regain your admissibility until you get up to the top. You have no place to run, but then you end up with two trees. So two is okay since we just want some constant. All right, so you split into, I don't know, something like this. Then at the end here, it has to be this. So you've got two trees on top. This one's rather trivial tree, but you can't avoid that. You have to be there, right? So that's how you get this, okay? And I just want to finish with one more slide, which there are no more drawings and not much talking either. I just happened to notice that, maybe I put it there. This, you can play this game on Schlumprecht space also, in which case things are a little bit different in terms of the assumptions. So I just let you read it. This is what I can get in this case. I don't think it's anything new. Well, basically, I couldn't really get anything new. It's just a whole bunch of equivalences, but I think it sort of explains some things, but I don't get any new examples. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say.